hello everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer I'm bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball WA. It's a week off for the Perth Wildcats after a stunning five-game run saw them leap to fourth on the NBL ladder with a 7-5 record, while the Perth Lynx are enjoying their best start to a WNBL season since 1995. Life is good for basketball fans in this state right now. And life is extremely good for former Wildcats captain Damian Martin, who is going to have his number 53 jersey retired in February. He'll be a guest of mine today. And life is good for Perth Wildcats import Christian Doolittle, and he will be in studio to discuss his fascinating life and his career so far. But first, having your jersey retired is a massive honour, and this is how Damian Martin found out on Monday night.
On February 4th, they're actually going to retire another jersey of the Perth Wildcats, number 53, if you know who wore that jersey a few years ago. Damian Martin, congratulations. You're going to have your jersey retired. It's been an honor to be your teammate. And, you know, I'm proud to be able to be here today and honor you with your jersey retirement.
Yes, Damian Martin, congratulations and welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
No, my pleasure. I actually haven't played that back yet, and I'm glad you cut it off where you did, because I think a bit of hay fever snuck in after that and I got a little emotional. So I'm glad you cut it where you did.
You started crying. Let's face it. You cried.
Oh, I had a tear maybe roll down. So it was overwhelming. I wasn't expecting it. And if you'd asked me, you know, how I think I would have responded had my jersey got retired, I don't think it would have taken me the way it did. I would have been surprised, but to not be able to talk, you know, to have tears rolling down, it was just a beautiful moment, because I didn't know if the day would ever come, and then to have it presented in a way that it was, I thought was perfect. I learned so much from Sean as a teammate in the early days, to then just a lifelong friend, and just over the moon that he got to present it to me. And I was completely oblivious, had no idea whatsoever that it was coming. So the other thing I realised is how easy it is for my wife to keep secrets from me, because she's known for about a week.
I was going to say, you turn 40 next year, your spidey senses will be up on full alert, won't they, as you think about parties and what people have got planned. How did they pull the wool over your eyes? Have you asked the question so far to understand how it was all pulled together?
Yeah, Brick got a phone call last week from the club, and the club gave her a heads up saying this is what they're, you know, planning on doing. You know, could she bring the girls in to the studio so that they can be a part of it? And even during the interview, after Shawnee had told me, the first surprise was every Monday we talk basketball with the same journo. And then during the day, we got told, hey, Sean's actually going to do it. Fever break. Let's just do a recap of the season so far from a legend of the club. I thought, yep, that makes sense. So thought nothing of it. Got to the studio. Paul Haysby, my co-host, he said, oh, I think Sean's coming into the studio. I said, nah, it's probably just over the phone. And then when Sean walked in, I thought, oh, what a legend. Way to go above and beyond, because it's way better when guests come into the studio. And then when he started talking and he mentioned that a jersey number is going to be retired, do I know who wore number 53 or whatever it was that he said, I was just completely taken aback. I had no idea. And one of the first things I said was, I can't wait to be able to call my loved ones, thinking Britt and the kids were at home. And before you knew it, the door opened and there's my three girls running up to me and my wife walking into the studio. So just a beautiful way to do it. And even though this next part may have been a coincidence, Feb 4th is my mum's birthday, and mum and dad, all the sacrifices they've made, you know, I absolutely adore them as people and so grateful to have them as my parents. So it's just fitting that it'll be celebrated the day of my mum's birthday.
That is quite brilliant. How old are your kids now? Because I'd imagine they're at an age where they're probably going to remember this moment, whereas they wouldn't have been old enough really to remember it when you were playing.
Yeah, so Maggie still asks why I'm not playing for the Wildcats. She still, you know, vividly remembers going to Wildcats games. And even on my, you know, fridge at home, one of my favourite photos ever taken whilst I was a player was, it was after a basketball game and I'm on court with Maggie. She was wearing my jersey. We're holding hands. And she was probably three or four. And it's just one of those moments of the reason I played as long as I did at the back end was two reasons: try and win as many championships as possible with whatever time I got left in the game, and just knowing how much enjoyment it brought to Maggie. Bonnie and Poppy, Maggie's now 7, Bonnie's 4, she's you know, too young to remember it, and Poppy wasn't born while I was out there playing. But Maggie in particular, she remembers it. She wears the number 53. I swear I didn't force that on her for the Basler team she's a part of, and she understands, you know, what happened yesterday. So, yeah, I can't wait to have the whole family be a part of it on the day, and at least two of the three kids, you know, will remember it, but I'm sure we'll take plenty of photos so that it's in the album for years to come to look back on.
And you mentioned your parents. As a parent yourself, now that you've got your own kids and you reflect a bit on what happened to get you to become the talent that you were, like the driving and the amount of time away from home, really. Like, regional kids have to do so much more work than metropolitan kids just to have an opportunity. You were one of those regional kids who would have spent hours in the car, wouldn't you? And the sacrifice from your parents from a working perspective to get you to where you needed to be?
Oh, it's amazing. It's one of those things, if I could go back in time, I might have said the word thank you more than I ever did, because I, you know, at the age of 14, my teammates from Gloucester, New South Wales, they were sick of the travel because we were driving upwards of 6.5 hours on a weekend to play in tournaments, and they all quit to play rugby league. Mum and Dad knew how much I was enjoying the game, so they said if I wanted to continue playing, I could play for Newcastle, which was about, or Lake Macquarie, which was about 1:45 each way. And so Dad would work from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., knock off work, get me to training by about 7 p.m., train for 1.5 hours, and then drive, you know, 1:45 home. And, you know, I'd pretty much sleep in the car, and we'd do that Tuesdays, Thursdays, and then upwards of 3.5 hours to Sydney on a weekend. And you just don't realise how much of a sacrifice that entailed, because between Mum and Dad, they got me to and from every single training session and game, but it also meant my four siblings, they were either dragged along to games or they didn't get to see their mum or dad for 2, 3, 4 days a week. So just amazing what they did. And after a year of doing it, it was me that turned to Mum and Dad and said, I'm sick of missing parties. I'm sick of the travel of me. You know, didn't realise how selfish I was. They didn't judge me whatsoever. They supported my decision to quit basketball and go to rugby league. But then Rob Beveridge, who, you know, will be one of the first people I invite on Feb 4th, he called me. He was the New South Wales Institute of Sport coach back then. Convinced me to come back to basketball. I quit rugby league on the spot. And then we went back to those astronomical hours and sacrifices that my parents made of getting back in the car and making the commute. But they're the things that I've been thinking of, you know, in the last, you know, 24 odd hours or since I've had the news told to me. It's just so many people had to go above and beyond in order for me to even pursue a sport I loved, let alone help me get to where I got to in the end. So yeah, Mum and Dad, people, you know, you take for granted what your parents sacrificed. Now that I'm a dad myself, I hope to go on to be as good a dad as mine, but I dare say even if I get to 50% of that, it still makes me an incredible father.
You made a career out of doing something that isn't fashionable too. Yeah, your defensive skills isn't what kids grow up wanting to be, but every single team needs someone who's prepared to do that work. When did you realise that defence would make you a star, and was there a person who put that thought into your head?
Not necessarily, because I never thought playing professional basketball would ever be realistic, but I always loved the game, and, you know, the fear of failure or letting my teammates down more than anything probably drove me more with whatever I, you know, do whatever it takes to try and win. So as, believe it or not, as a youngster, I actually was a scorer, but every single coach I've had along the way, whether it was my dad, whether it was other Gloucester coaches, we pretty much always pressed. You know, you pick up full court. As soon as you score, you try and apply pressure, you know, 90 foot from the basket. And then Vicky Sams, you know, my under 16s coach at Lake Macquarie, you know, she's only small in stature, but she is had the biggest influence on me as a junior. She was all about defense and just making sure that you did the little things correctly and you did it to the best of your ability. So Vicky Sams was amazing. And then obviously I was fortunate enough to be coached by some of the best coaches in Australia, in Rob Beveridge and Marty Clark, in those early days and influential days. But once I moved to Canberra, my role did shift. I'd gone from being, you know, a scorer and a defender with the New South Wales teams or junior teams. But once I got to Canberra, I was surrounded by players much better at the offensive end than I ever was. Stevie Markovic, Rhys Carter, Aaron Bruce, Andrew Bogut, Brad Newley, just to name a few. So my role changed to how do I put these players in the in their best possible positions to put them in a situation where they're playing to their strengths. And for me, you know, Marty Clark, you know, demanded that between Brad Robbins and I, or whoever it was in the backcourt with me, that we picked up full court and we tried to get under the skin of the opposition. So it's more so just getting told to do it and knowing that was my role and how I can help the team, just trying to do it as well as I could, because like I said, you know, letting my teammates down was probably my biggest fear out there on the court.
And then you get Trev coaching you, who's maniacal with his approach to defense as well. The hand in glove element of that relationship must have been absolutely perfect for the way you wanted to play and knew what your strengths were and what he wanted the team to do.
Yeah, and one of the things I'll forever be grateful to Trev is he wasn't afraid to hold me accountable. So if I ever took shortcuts, he'd put it on film, he'd call me out in front of my teammates, and he probably played to that fear factor of letting them down, knowing it would inspire me to make sure I never took a shortcut or took, you know, whatever it may have been he was calling me out on in film, that I did it again. And the other thing was, in saying that, he gave me so much leeway that he backed me to make the right decision. And he allowed me to play a style of defense that he probably didn't allow to any of my other teammates or many players in the league were awarded. So, you know, if I wanted to go and make a gamble and double team or go for a steal or really apply pressure against someone who may have technically been faster than me and, you know, play the game of give up a blow by or get a steal, he backed me to make those decisions. And he pretty much never called me in and said, hey, I'm trying to change the way you see the game at the defensive end. He just always made sure that I was giving my all and reading the game the way he wanted me to, but never ever for a second tried to change it. He just made sure we're all on the same page.
It does take a lot of courage to overcommit, doesn't it? Like, because that's what you have to do to defend well. You have to be prepared to do something that if it goes wrong, you're going to get scored against. If it goes well, you're going to win the ball back, but you have to go over and above what most people would do to make sure that you're in a position to win that ball back, and that comes with risk.
Yeah, it certainly does, and I think you've got to earn it. Like shooting an open, you know, step-back three-pointer, you know, like making a play on the ring, you've got to earn it in training. And over time, you know, I was lucky that coaches helped me with how to read it, you know, what are the moves the players are going to go to in the fourth quarter, you know, what have they been practicing so that when the most pressure's on the line, they're probably going to use their go-to move. So if I can read that one play ahead, and you know, if a big's on the block and you can read that he's probably going to fake baseline and go middle, can I go run and jump middle to try and draw a charge or get a steal? And these things, you know, I was lucky enough that Trev, Marty, Bevo, you name it, the coaches I had, they all essentially said, we'll back you to make the right read, because my teammates were also aware that there's a chance that I might go and do something crazy at the defensive end. So they had my back. They knew that they had to be aware of where I was as well, in case all of a sudden, without it being a call from a timeout or a part of the game plan, that I could all of a sudden find myself in a double team. So they had to help behind me. So it was trust, not just from the coaches, but from my teammates, to be able to make a read on the game based off the movements I made.
You mentioned so many names of people who have helped you along the way. One of my favourite memories of Sean Redditch's retirement presentation was looking over my shoulder and seeing yourself and Greg Heyer and all the mates standing there looking like they're having the time of their lives and so proud of him. Mm. Having seen what it's actually like and experienced it with your mates watching your mate have this, does that make your excitement about what will happen on the night even greater, because you've seen how much it means to so many people?
I'm actually a nervous wreck. So, you know, over the moon, blown away by the fact that this is all happening, but really nervous about the night itself. Excited to catch up with all those amazing people who I've met along the way and now call lifelong friends. But even last night, it was, you know, found out the news, drove to Whitford's, and whilst my wife was able to keep a great secret about the jersey retirement, she just said, oh, look, can you please come to this pub immediately after radio? I'm like, okay, that's a very subtle way of saying she's organised something. But it was small and intimate, the way she knew I would have liked it, with, you know, Jesse Wagstaff and his family. You know, I lived with Jesse for the first month when I moved to Perth. Brad Robbins, he was my roommate, and we go back to 14-year-olds as teammates. So to have, you know, Brad and his family there, and then Greg Heyer is one of my dearest friends, you know, he and his family there, just we all started as young kids who were connected through, you know, a sport we love. And now, you know, three of the four of us are retired and still the best of friends, but got families, you know, grown up now and, you know, have these lifelong bonds. So that's what sport can, you know, give to you as a person, passport to see the world and a way to meet new people who will become more important to you than you ever expected. So, you know, they're the ones I got to celebrate with last night, but players like Bryce Cotton reaching out meant the world to me. You know, Martin Catalini, Matty Nielsen, you know, I know I'm going to forget a lot, so I won't try and name all of them, but it was just a really nice moment scrolling through text messages. And whilst I haven't read any, it was just nice seeing the names of where they came from. And I put a smile on my face because every single name I read, there was 1, 2, 20, 50 memories that came flooding back from things we've done on or off the court together.
And one of the great things about that February 4 date, you mentioned not only is it your mum's birthday, but that there's a, it's a FIBA window for the Perth Lynx, and Brad Robbins is a Perth Lynx assistant coach, so he won't be working at a game anywhere that weekend. He won't be over in interstate with them. It's worked out really well that he'll be in WA, which is terrific from that perspective, I would have thought. Now, COVID robbed you of so many moments in the sun, which is ironic, but your last game was in Sydney behind locked gates. You had no idea it would be your last game at the time. You learned you won a championship via Zoom. When the banner got raised up, you got to press the button, but it was in front of a 50% capacity crowd. The joint will be pumping in February when you get to experience this moment. Like, do you feel like it'll be the perfect exclamation point on the career, given that the way it ended wasn't normal in any way?
Well, I had actually never really thought about it, to be honest. There is nothing better than running out in front of the Red Army. And every single game I ever played for the Wildcats, I was nervous, you know, right up until tip-off. But when your name is called, you run out and you hear the applaud, or something happens during the game and there's a big moment and the crowd goes to another level, you know, you just wanted to do whatever it took to replicate that moment over and over and over again. And that's what the Red Army affords their players or gives to their players. So always grateful for what the Red Army did and changed my life. And to be able to get out there one more time and kind of say thank you to the Red Army, because I didn't get to after I retired, yeah, will be really nice, because they've been as important to all the memories I've got as, you know, any individual themselves.
And just finally, you embraced WA, you became the face of the Wildcats after arriving here, and you really embedded yourself in the culture of the group and the club. So to look up at the names that you see hanging from the rafters already and know that your name's going to sit alongside them, what's that going to be like?
Yeah, it's going to be a pinch me moment. I dare say it's going to put a smile on my face from ear to ear every single time I walk into RAC Arena for a Wildcats game. And I don't know if it'll ever sink in. So I know my daughter Maggie in particular is really excited about it. Where we went for dinner last night, there was face painting, but she actually got her basketball jersey painted on her forearm with the number 53. So I think she's more excited than anyone else. But it's something I'll never take for granted, and just reading the names alongside it. You know, they were players I either idolised or looked up to when I was coming through my junior days, or like the case with number 42, got to call Shawnee Redditch a teammate. So it's a bond that will never be taken away from all of us. And then you go through all of them. You know, Mike Ellis is one of the nicest guys you could ever possibly meet, from an incredible family, and he's been fantastic. Andrew Vlahov, you know, I get to call a friend now, and I've learned so much from he as well. Scotty Fish, I got to meet for the first time recently, and I was blown away with how humble he is down to earth, despite being one of the all-time greats. And yeah, there's so many deserving players who aren't up there that I call lifelong friends and teammates. And I dare say there'll be a few more names added there at some stage. But right now, it just hasn't sunk in. You know, I can't wait for Feb 4th, even though I said I'm a nervous wreck at the thought of it.
Well, congratulations. It's awesome news. The Red Army are going to lose their minds when you get the chance to go out there, because it's you've such an important part to this club and to them and all the success you've brought. So congratulations. We all will be counting down the days until your number 53 is hanging from the rafters.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that.
Well, it's been a big few months for Perth Wildcats import Christian Doolittle. Signed and released in France, he then returned to America and got married, moved straight to Perth, he got hurt, and then he's had some massive games after returning, including last weekend. So it's fair to say his life hasn't been dull.
Here comes Doolittle with a full head of steam, all the way to the bucket, and down. Doolittle punches it home.
Quick catch and shoot for Doolittle. It counts! Nice. Christian Doolittle at the halftime buzzer.
Christian Doolittle, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Is your head spinning a bit? You've been all around the world the past couple of months. There's been a bit going on for you.
At first it was, but you know, it's getting used to playing overseas. You get used to the quick turnarounds, especially for someone like myself who plays year-round. And so I'm going from one place to another, going home for maybe a week and a half, and then going off somewhere else for the full season. So this last change around was kind of quicker than I've ever had to experience before. But, you know, I've been able to settle in here in Perth.
So when you went back from France, you got married that week as well. Was that heavily planned? I wouldn't have thought it was.
Originally, I was going to do it in France. I was going to propose to her and have the whole ceremony out there in France, have both of our families out there. But, you know, me coming home was kind of an unexpected opportunity to have, but to save my family traveling because, you know, they're not really big on flying like I am. It's part of the job for me. So we was able to do it, have our intermediate families there to, you know, be there for that moment, which was nice.
So it looks like a backyard wedding in one of the photos, and it looked like a normal traditional wedding in another.
We had the ceremony at her house, but then we took actual wedding photos a couple of days later in downtown Oklahoma City that with a photographer and stuff like that was planned. We kind of just had to throw something together because we didn't have, you know, nobody was expecting me to come home like I did, so we didn't really have time to orchestrate a whole wedding, but we're going to have that later on whenever I'm back for an extended amount of time.
And to add to the dramas you've had and excitement of the past couple of months, you've got a baby on the way.
Yeah, baby boy. Yeah, I just found out a couple of weeks ago I'm going to have my son, so I'm very excited.
How's Mackenzie, Mackie, how are we?
Government is Mackenzie, but we call her Mackie. She goes by Mackie, so... but, you know, we're all excited. You know, she's having her good days and her bad days dealing, you know, with the struggles of being pregnant and stuff like that. So I'm doing my best to be able to help her through it as much as I can. Some days she hates me. Some days she loves me. So I'm just rolling with the punches.
How is it from obviously when you're traveling around the world, was it important for you to be married just to make it easier for you to get in and out of different countries? Has that made your life a bit more simple?
I didn't even know about the extra stuff with being married or having your significant other travel with you, but it definitely does make it a lot easier, you know, paperwork-wise to be married. But, you know, that's not why I married her. I mean, I was going to marry her regardless. But it just kind of worked out that way, you know. But I'm glad I did. Like, it's cool.
Yeah, makes it a lot easier. You can get into the country a bit quicker. That's for sure. So if you can bring the wedding forward slightly to make it easier. And from a baby perspective, how long is she going to be in Australia? Given that there's going to be some challenges around flying home when she gets to a certain point.
She'll leave in February. That's 30-week date for when, you know, pregnant people can travel. So she'll be here as long as she can, and then spend expecting a baby in late April. So. You know, whenever I'm finished here, I'll go back, have the kid, and I'll be home with them, chilling until I decide whether I'm going to go play again soon. Or either that summer or I'm going to wait until the next full season. I haven't decided yet.
So many decisions that you got to make. And it's amazing. Being an import, like, it's not a simple life. As we've just discovered, you got a wedding to plan, you got a baby on the way. And you've gone from Oklahoma to Puerto Rico to Cleveland to Israel to Japan to France, and now you're in Perth. A lot of people would say it's a glamorous lifestyle traveling around. Is it glamorous or is it really hard work and stressful?
The glamour doesn't outshine the behind the scenes stuff that goes on. Like you said, it's constantly changing. You know, I give a lot of credit to my agent for putting me in a very good positions at all times. It can get anxious waiting to see where you're going to go, which teams are interested in you. And, you know, sometimes most of the decisions are made last moment, especially because since I'm playing constantly, I kind of have that last window of teams that are signing their players because I'm still playing, competing for championships, you know, in Puerto Rico when most of the teams are signing with that first wave of imports. And so I kind of get not necessarily slim pickings, but there's definitely limited amount of spots whenever I'm ready to make my decision. Because, I maybe get about 4 or 5 days off, and then it's like, all right, well, now I got to decide where I'm going to go next. And so it can get a little overwhelming at times. But, you know, my situation I feel like is unique because I haven't had I came out, I graduated in when COVID first happened. So since COVID, I've maybe had for the past going on 4 years, maybe a month and a half total off in terms of in between time of when I stop playing and then going to play somewhere else. So, you know, life has been hectic for me, but I just have a go-getter mentality. I don't like sitting at home for a long time. I like to go play. I just like to play basketball. I don't really care where I go. So that makes that me not having necessarily a high like requirements makes it a lot easier for my agent to be able to just tell me this team wants you, you pick. And so that's usually what it, how it goes.
You've had a lot of success as well everywhere you've gone. And it's not usually a coincidence when a player goes somewhere and success follows them and they're able to slot into a program really well. We saw you come over here and you weren't shooting much and then all of a sudden you found your range and worked out where you would fit into this team. Are you really proud of your ability to slot into any environment and help that team to be better?
Yeah, I think that's one of my greatest strong suits of I'm not the type of person to where it's going to the team has to adjust to me. I feel like I can go in and play in any type of system because of the range of my abilities. You know, for me, it's not I'm not fixated on scoring. I know certain teams will require me to do different things, and so I take everything as a challenge to be better in a different way. You know, with this team, it took me a while to figure out how I was going to fit in, things that the team needed me to do. But you know, I got here two days before the first game, and so it was kind of like I was just happy to be here. You know, I was just trying to learn the plays, learn everybody's name. I didn't even know anybody's name my first game. It was just it was just basketball. But as I became more familiar with the team, the plays and everything, and how the tendencies of my teammates, the way that the league plays, I've been able to slowly but surely, gradually, be more confident, assert myself in different ways, whether it be playing defense, rebounding, been able to knock down open shots. And so, I'm just happy that I've been able to impact the team in a positive way to help us win these past three games and hopefully can keep that going on forward.
So that first game, you don't know everyone's names, which is just reality for everyone. I reckon takes me a while to remember everyone's names, but you're out there in front of a big crowd competing. How were you calling for the ball? What were you doing when you were trying to communicate with people?
Man, it was just like, hey, whatever number.
You're calling by numbers.
Yeah, because I mean, I didn't know. I had just met everybody 48 hours before we played. I had learned maybe two plays that I knew without having to be told where to go. So it was tough. You know, I've never been in a situation like that before to where I not only did I not know the plays, I didn't know nobody's name. I just knew our coach's name and our general manager's name. I didn't know anything else. And so I've been able to work past that pretty well.
And what about opposition players? Because when you're going all the way around the world, you're constantly coming up against players you've never met before, you've never played against, so you're relying on the scout, and you're learning names for that as well. Is that a real challenge?
Not necessarily, because, I mean, the scout helps you a lot. That's something I take pride in and being able to watch film. And so the film is like a cheat sheet for the game. As long as you study that very well, and, you know, you're going to be in position. As long as you put yourself in position on what you've seen on film, you'll be fine. And I feel like that's helped me a lot. The coaching staff does a really good job of preparing us with scout before the game, scout leading up into the week, you know, the tendencies of the opposition, who your matchups are going to be. And so, I pay close attention to that.
Talk us through the trophies that you've won, because you have many trophies that you've won in the championship team so far.
I have two championships in Puerto Rico. I won one my rookie year, and I won one 2 years ago. And then this previous year, I won a championship in Japan as well. So I'm 3-for-3 so far in championships. And so I'm trying to make it 4-for-4 here in Australia.
Have you mentioned anything to Bryce or Jesse?
I know they got their championships, and so I'm not going to try to bring mine up. But definitely, I know I have to catch Wags when he's done playing, because I know he got six. So that's definitely something I'm going for.
Do you look at the Wildcats as an organization, so much success, and you see all the banners hanging when you're playing, and think, well, I have joined a team which is going to help me to continue this legacy that you're building for yourself?
Definitely. You know, when I first got here, they had showed me the wall where they have all the trophies, seeing all the years on the trophies. And so not only the long time ago success, but also the recent success as well, you know, it shows that, you know, this is an organization that competes for a championship every single year, and that's their expectations. And so, I mean, that's mine as well. I don't play just to play. I play to win. I hate losing more than I like winning. So, anything that I can do, you know, sacrifice myself to help this team reach the ultimate goal, which is a championship. You know, I've been, you know, brought up saying that when the team wins, everybody wins. And so it's not, that's why I don't really get caught up in what whose stats are what or who shoots how many times. I just want to win. And so, you know, anything I can do to help is my ultimate goal.
You had a really horrible moment when your knee buckled in earlier in the year. And where I was sitting, it looked like knee reconstruction written everywhere. And I'm told you were in tears in the tunnel at one point because you thought you'd done it that badly. Yeah. How frightening was that moment knowing baby on the way, career happening here, wife's just had, I think she'd arrived 2 days before or something.
Yeah, and she had just got there. That was our first game and I got hurt.
It must have been terrible.
Yeah, I almost told her to go back home. But it was, you know, it was tough. Yeah, I couldn't watch it back. They wanted me to see how bad it, like how crazy it looked, because I heard it looked crazy and what it actually was. You know, missing the tears in the tunnel, I just couldn't walk. I was, you know, getting helped off the court by two people who are very shorter than me, so I was having to do most of the heavy lifting myself, and I just couldn't. And so when I got to the tunnel, I had just collapsed. I had to get a wheelchair to the doctor to get it looked at, and then I had to go get an X-ray. And it was nothing but bad thoughts going through my head because I didn't know what was going on. I've never been hit like that, you know, having somebody dive at my leg like that. But, you know, I knew it wasn't intentional. It was just, you know, a freak accident. I'm just happy that it was just a bone bruise and I was able to, you know, unfortunately I missed that next game. But, you know, with the help of the training staff and everybody, I was able to get back out the very next game. So that's why I was just like, I don't take anything for granted.
The thing that hits me when I look at you at training, you're often the one who's running around without a top on, and you are as strong and as wide and as powerful as anyone we've seen coming through this. Like your chest looks like a billboard, it's so wide, and you got these massive feet.
Yeah.
You look just athletically strong, and you're from an athletic family. Do you feel that strength helped you in that moment?
I would like to say so. I mean, I come from a family that I did a lot of yard work growing up, you know, moving heavy stuff, working with my grandpa. He was, you know, I guess you could say he was the one like cutting grass and stuff. That's what he did after he retired. And so I would always go out there and help him to get an extra couple of bucks. That was the way. If you wanted some money, you got to go help my pawpaw. And so, you know, being from where I'm from, Oklahoma, that's kind of what we do, outside stuff. And so I think that was because I don't like lifting, believe it or not. I don't like lifting weights. And so I've always been naturally strong. That kind of runs in our family, being naturally strong. And so I don't know what helped me not tear something or mess something up, but I guess whatever I've been doing, it helped me get through that.
It's amazing you don't lift weights. I'd love to look like you and not lift weights. It'd be amazing. Tell me about your feet. They are huge. Like, tell us some stories about the challenges you've had over time finding some shoes.
Well, I wear a size 17, and so there is no in-store shopping. It's never been. I remember I went from elementary school, I wore a 13, and then going into my sixth grade year, I grew into a 17. And so it was very tough to be able to find shoes that just fit. Because, I mean, back then, going on the internet and typing in size 17, where can we find them, wasn't what it is now. Being able to order them home, we would have to drive somewhere. I remember the only time we could really buy shoes in stores was when we would have to drive to Texas to go to an outlet store. And it would be like four shoes available in like clown colors, red, like solid red, all white, black, or like a off color, like a yellow. And it's like, well, give me the red ones then. It was tough, especially because, I mean, I'm the tallest one in my family, by far the biggest feet in my family as well. So there wasn't like an outlet for us to help us out or anything. So, you know, but now that I've gotten older, I've been able to get my own shoes. I got so many shoes, I can't even count how many. So I made up for it in the end.
So you said your schooling system then, we have a different schooling system to use. How old were you when you were talking about you jumped to that size 17?
12.
12 years old.
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah. And you got another giant on your team, Alexa. Had to call on his services to help you at some point this year.
I ripped my shoes in the Adelaide game, you know, just I get wrong cut, something just ripped him from the bottom. And so I had to use his extra pair of shoes, and that's the first time I've ever been able to do that. Ask somebody, can I wear your shoes? And then I was able to. So I was able to play that second half. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any shoes to play in. So I always bring two pair now.
Would have been rather awkward. You had Brady Manek on your team back in the U.S. What sort of advice did he give you over here, and what sort of sounding board has he been for you?
Me and Brady ain't even talking about me coming out here. He was but I know our families are close. My parents and his parents, I grew up with Brady. I've been playing with Brady since I was like 6 years old. Me, him, and his brother always been close. And then, you know, Brady going, me and Brady playing OU together was also, you know, a big step for us. But hearing from what his parents said, you know, they touched on the physicality. You know, in that case, me and Brady are the complete opposite, you know, in terms of built-wise. But they've always spoken highly of Australia, especially of Perth. You know, they loved it out here. They loved everything about it, you know, going to the games and things like that. And so they told me that my parents had told my parents that I would love it out here.
It was amazing. His parents, they were out here. They were flying back and forth from America all the time.
And then
flying around the country going to games. It was the greatest working holiday you could ever hope for for them. Tell me about your dad. He's a basketball referee. You don't foul much. Like, what sort of an impact has he had on helping you to understand the rules and the little things you can do to make sure that you're in a better position for the team?
Yeah, it's definitely has always played to my advantage. Growing up, that's how I was introduced to basketball. I was going to his games, watching him ref rather than going to watch the game itself, you know, going to the referee camps that he would host to teach refs what to look for and what not to look for, like what is a foul and what's not a foul. And so understanding the game from that aspect on what I can get away with and what I can't, also, you know, I feel like gives me an edge sometimes, especially on the defensive end, understanding how physical I can be until it's becoming too much. You know, just the ins and outs that aren't necessarily taught. I was taught that way. I was kind of taught inverted. I was taught with the refs, you know, the referee standpoint rather than learning the basketball standpoint as well. And so, you know, I rarely foul. So they call fouls on me. I'm going to say something to them. It's like, that wasn't no foul. Because I understand, like, I think like a ref rather than thinking like a basketball player. And so, you know, it's always helped me a lot.
Does it help you with the respect relationship sort of thing with refs? I'd imagine you wouldn't be overly abusive towards them, whereas some people are. Yeah. Do you find yourself pulling yourself back because, you know, that could have been your dad?
Well, my dad wasn't allowed to ref my games. Not because he would cheat for me, because he would be too hard on me. We wouldn't get any fouls, especially me. Ain't no foul. Or he would tell, you know, I was on a first-name basis with all his peers, because they was, I mean, I was around them a lot. They was almost like uncles, everybody. And so anytime I had somebody that I knew, it's going to be a long day. And so it also helped me to understand that to deal with adversity, because, you know, some games they're gonna call fouls for you, sometimes they're not. But, you know, I'm not one to talk much. Like, now that I'm older, I don't really talk much. You know, I might say a couple of things. I might, you know, keep it short and sweet with a ref, or ask him what I did and just keep it moving. I'm not one to go back and forth, really. You know, I'm kind of just too locked in to be dealing with all that, especially with like anybody else. If you're not on my team, I ain't really going to talk to you.
You're a pretty resilient bloke, aren't you? Like, in college, you had an issue with academics, which got you suspended for a little bit of time. Then you went and played in the summer league, and you got banned for that as well. Then you went to France, and they badmouthed you and cut you, and you come over here. But you've handled all these scenarios, and look like you've just handled them and gone, yeah, whatever, I'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, I usually say, I just roll with the punches. The academic thing was a unfortunate situation. You know, I was just helping somebody out, and they turned in my homework, so I got in trouble for that. And then, you know, with the France thing, it just didn't work out. You know, they said what they said about me, but clearly, you know, my parents told me that, you know, what the truth is will prevail. And I feel like, you know, I am who I am. I can't fake who I am. You know, who I've been for this team is who I've always been. You know, I'm just quiet, do my work, come in every day, do what's asked of me, you know, regardless of what that is. And, you know, I don't complain about nothing. I just try to find ways to be able to do the best of my ability of what's asked of me. And so, you know, I put that France thing behind me. You know, it's a learning curve. So I understand that it's a business, you know, it's not just basketball, unfortunately. There's also things that go on behind the scenes that aren't on my control. Even what I do on the court can't, you know, overcome those things. So I just try to stay positive in everything.
You mentioned your dad. We've spoken about his refereeing. He's a commentator as well.
Yeah.
He was in an extraordinary position this year where he was calling a game and gunshots went off.
Yeah.
Inside the stadium.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's America for you, unfortunately. You know, especially where I'm from, that's not a coincidence. And so he's also a police officer. So, you know, he was off duty, of course, you know, you're just calling a high school basketball game on the radio. Unfortunately, somebody started shooting inside the arena. But, you know, thankfully he was okay. You know, there was whoever, I don't know, I can't remember if anyone got hurt that night, but I think everybody turned out to be okay. But, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy, especially Oklahoma. It's like the wild, wild west out there. Anybody can get a gun. And so you never know. You might just be minding your business or, like, at the store or something. And, you know, it's crazy. Like, they'd be walking it on with the hip. Like, he's like, yeah, shit.
It's a different world to Perth, isn't it?
Yeah, by far. That's another reason why I don't like staying home, because it's a lot crazier. Especially, you know, I keep saying where I'm from, but, you know, I like being away, because, you know, it helps me realize that, you know, especially when you watch the news and hear all the stuff that's going on, it's just a breath of fresh air whenever you can just be. Like I said, I don't like to play basketball. I don't really endeavor with too much. I just want to hoop, and so I know I won't be able to be able to play forever. So I'm just taking advantage of the time that I have now to just focus on basketball. And I don't have to worry about, you know, my safety or stuff like that. It's just I just want to play.
You had any near misses back in Oklahoma? Has there been any times where you're just wrong place, wrong time, and all of a sudden you're ducking for cover?
Yeah, there's been some times like that, unfortunately, you know, just trying to hang out with your friends. And then, you know, come with people getting an argument that you ain't got, you know, you just, like I said, it just could be me and you talking, and next thing you know, some people over the room, they getting into it, so now everybody got to go, you know. It's definitely some times where I've been wrong place, wrong time, and, you know, got to get out of there. And, you know, my friends and myself, just, you know, be careful.
Well, right place, right time is Wildcats at the moment for you. So, look, thank you very much for coming in. Really appreciate your time. Hopefully the rest of the season goes really well for you.
Thank you.
Well, Perth Lynx sit on top of the WNBL ladder. They have a 3-0 record after their three home games and are absolutely flying, with Airy McDonald tearing the competition apart. It's been a long, 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 long time since they've been 3-0 to start a year, all the way back to 1995. So they haven't had this sort of a opportunity to play home games like they have. And in the past, they've had issues like imports arriving quite late, not being overly settled. But despite being a really good team for several years, they haven't been able to be 3-0. So they are in a perfect position now to launch for this season. They have a Wednesday night game this week up against Southside. So it will be a 4 p.m. start Western Standard Time for that game. Really important match for them up against Lauren Jackson and co. And then they head back to Perth to face Sammy Whitcomb, returning to WA for Townsville Fire. That game is on Saturday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Bendat Basketball Centre. They can jag these two games. Well, they are well and truly in a position to have a real crack at this season. Ryan Petrick has the team flying at the moment, and it's great to see. So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thank you to Damian Martin. Thank you to Christian Doolittle. You can continue to read all of your news about basketball in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.